Today on The Grave Talks, part two of the Haunted Hospitals of Tennessee with owner Ronnie D.
And when I bought the hospital, myself and a young lady named Renee Dykes were actually standing in the lobby, and we started talking about Jim. And I will tell you, it was the freakiest thing that has ever happened to me in my life. But as Renee and I are talking, I felt a hand in my hair, and it yanked my head down so hard that it actually snapped my neck back. And Renee's standing across from me, and I remember looking up at her, and she was white. And I was like, "You saw that, right?" She says, "Oh my gosh, yes." She says, "I saw your hair move. I saw," and I was just like, "Yeah." Well, we realized that as time went on, it was Jim. Jim, we were talking about Jim, and a young lady and I named Candace Weston and I went through Jim's stuff. Jim had passed away and lived here for many, many years, and he had left everything behind. His whole life was in a room in the hospital. So Candace and I decided that we were going to go through his personal belongings. And what we uncovered about Jim was absolutely amazing. One of the things that they said was Jim was gay, that he was, he was gay. So anyways, so we're going through some of the paperwork and we find a dating website that he had printed out, and it was his full name and where he lived. And his heading on it was, "Still haven't found the woman of my dreams." So I'm like, well, okay. So that just debunked that one.
Right.
And there were so many other things about Jim that was said that as we're going through all of his paperwork, we're like, none of this is true. Like, there was not a single thing that was told to us about Jim when I was hunting the building prior to owning it that was absolutely true. So what we did is, now when people come and they do their tour, we introduce Jim again to all of the investigators, and we kind of tell them the real story of Jim and how he was. And what's really, really neat is now Jim is actually a little more playful. That negative kind of feeling that you got from him is all gone. And I've never had my hair pulled ever again. But it's really unique that we were able to kind of debunk some of the stories that were told about him, as we were learning and researching the building. And then one last thing, which is actually really kind of neat, and it's, once again, it's a story that we were told, that the maintenance man, and I find this funny because every location I've ever been to, there's always a maintenance man who dies in the basement. That's the first thing they tell you is, Eddie, the maintenance man, died right there. So when we've investigated here, it was the same thing. So we had a public investigation one night, and after that, the next morning, we all went to one of the local restaurants, and we're all sitting there. We all have our OSPH t-shirts on, and I love telling the story because it's just hysterical. But we're sitting there, and across from the table is this man, and he's staring at me. Like, I was like, oh my God, am I in trouble? What did I do wrong? So all of a sudden he gets up, he walks over, and he says, "Are you the owner of South Pittsburgh Hospital?" And I said, "Yes, sir." And I was waiting to get yelled at or whatever. He says, "Hi, I'm Art. I'm the maintenance man." And my mouth almost fell through the table because I looked at him straight in the eyes and I said, "You're dead." He says, "No, I'm not. I'm really not." I said, "No." I said, "I've been going to the hospital for years investigating there, and they told me you died on the floor." He's like, "No, I'm here." He's like, "As a matter of fact, once South Pittsburgh Hospital closed, he actually moved to a different hospital in Alabama to continue his career in the medical field in maintenance." So I was like, "No, this is not true. You can't be alive. You can't." And his wife is kind of laughing and chuckling at us. So we actually invited him back to the building because he hasn't been back here since it closed down, and we're walking through the building. And now remember, the building closed in the 90s, so we never turned the elevators back on. The elevators have been off since I bought the building. They're really disassembled. So we're walking through it, and all of a sudden the elevator dings. And Art stops dead in his tracks and looks at me and goes, "Did you turn the elevators back on?" And I'm like, "No." He says, "Well, we decommissioned those right after we left." I said, "No, we didn't turn them on." He says, "That's the elevator." He says, that bell is the elevator dinging. And I'm like, whoa. It was almost like Art was walking through the building and the building was kind of saying hi to him.
Yeah.
It was such a unique experience. But that all goes back to, like I said, trying to debunk all of this history that we were hearing about the building that wasn't true. And Art happened to be one of those pieces of history that I was fortunate enough to, be at the right place at the right time. Because now think about that. We're in a restaurant here in Kimball, Tennessee. He lives in Alabama now. What are the chances of my group of people and him being in that restaurant at the identical time for him to walk up to me and introduce himself to me? that's why I believe that Old South Pittsburgh was really kind of, it was all meant to be.
Yeah.
And for him to be there at that specific time was just something paranormal in my world.
And with the elevator ding sound of all things,
right?
He could have heard a chair move across the floor. He could have heard someone walking. He could have heard someone crying. But the elevator ding was significant to him because he knew the elevators didn't work.
Yeah, he made so many jokes about how they were such pieces of junk that he'd always have to fix them. And Arden himself is a unique story. He was a boy that came here in his early days. He had a medical surgery here, and he fell in love with the building. And he actually started hanging out at the building as a child. And so the medical staff here started giving him chores to do around the building. And as he got older and as he grew, he did more and more at the building. So finally they looked at him and said, why don't we just put you on payroll and you can do, so they sent him to school to do elevators and maintenance and everything. So he ended up like his whole life in this building from when he was a child until the building closed and he moved on to go to another facility. But that just goes to show like what a tight-knit community we have, is that somebody as a boy fell in love with this old building and ended up making it their whole career.
Now, when you got your hair pulled like that and your head was pulled back, that would feel to me very dark.
Like, very aggressive.
Yes. But do you think it was maybe more he was just trying to get your attention? Like, hey, listen to me. I'm here.
I think Jim is a very strong spirit we have in the building. And we can do a whole 2-hour show just on the experiences I've had with him. But I think, to be honest with you, I think he was tired of people, you know, talking the way they were about him and not giving him the credit that he deserved as a hell of a man. He worked for Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus, and he did their set designs. I've got totes and totes and totes of stuff at my house because I didn't want it to get ruined of his artistry, of his artistic abilities, But the man was just, he was gifted. Everything from art to music. He started his life out as a paratrooper jumping out of airplanes. He was honorably discharged from the military because he had diabetes. The military was his life. He went through a very depressed portion of his life because the military was all he knew. I know it hurt him very badly when he was discharged. And that's when he got the job with Barnum and Bailey Circus, and it kind of reinvigorated his life. And just like I said, the artistry that the man had, the creativity, it's just an amazing man. And I think he was really tired of people kind of dragging him through the trenches and saying what a bad person he was and not getting the credit in the afterlife that he really deserved while he was alive. I think he recognized the ability that I wanted to kind of change things. And like you said, I didn't get really scared about it. I was more like, holy crud. But I was more like, you know what? He's got a story to tell. Mm-hmm. We need to listen. And the more we listen, the more we realize that he's, like I said, an incredible person, just absolutely incredible.
And I'm going to assume, since you are open to paranormal investigations and that's what you do, that groups get a lot of activity there.
You know, it's like fishing. I'm going to be really honest with you. You know, even me being in the building, you know, I'll walk through the building like, oh, this place ain't haunted today. You have that feeling. And then there's times I'll walk in the room and go, oh, it's going to be one of those days. And, I think even from paranormal investigating point of view, I've got a lot of teams that come regularly. They'll talk about there's nights where, you know, it's off the hook where, I mean, it's just, they walk in the building, it's active from the time they, you know, get in to the time they leave. And then I've had groups, the same group come in a couple months later and they're like, oh yeah, we got a little here, a little there, but it wasn't really like as active as it was last time. And then they'll come back another time later and it's like once again off the hook. You know, I guess paranormal investigating, like we all talk about, is kind of like fishing. Sometimes that bobber is going to go crazy in the water and mm-hmm. sometimes the fish just aren't biting. And I think a lot of it has to do too with, you know, the style of investigating. And I think there's a lot of different characteristics that go into getting a lot of different activity. But like I said, even there's times when I'll come in the building and I'll walk through and I'm like, oh my God, I've got nothing but a pile of bricks here because there's really nothing going on. And then the next day, I'll walk in the building and I'm like, wow, the bricks are alive and talking today. Yeah. It's going to be a cool day. So, yeah.
Do you think that it also reacts to people's energy, you know, because I think that some people, I like to think a lot of investigators are respectful. I think most of them are, but I do think there's some people who might watch a lot of TV and try to taunt things or try to kind of make something happen. Do you feel like it responds to that at all?
I think paranormal investigating is a real fine line between what's doing right and not. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Is doing it, investigating the proper way and being wrong. Because like a good example is you and I, if I believe in something a lot and I'm trying to teach you what I believe in and you're like, yeah, I don't believe in it. There's going to be a point in time where I'm just like, all right, fine, I'm done. I'm not going to waste my breath with you, you know? And I think paranormal investigating is like that as well. When you come in with that energy and you believe in something, they're going to prove that they're here. But if I walk through the door and I've got a chip on my shoulder, I'm like, yeah, there's no such thing as ghosts. There's no such thing as residents or, you know, why am I going to sit in the afterlife trying to convince you that I'm here? Mm-hmm. So I really, really, truly think that when you come in with an open mind, I think you're more apt to get a better experience. And I think when you come in and you treat the residents of the hospital the way you want to be treated, and you take a sincere interest in their lives, I think they're going to respond as well too. And I think a lot of times, I think one thing that as paranormal investigators, we kind of miss the ball on is everybody asks the same questions. When did you die? Do you know you're dead? Well, you know, just like me or you, we can have a conversation, but if every time I saw you, I asked you the same question, you'd be like, dude, can we move on and talk about something else? And I kind of think that investigating is the same way. You've got to walk into a location and make it interesting for that spirit to want to reach out back to you. If you're asking them, you know, what year did you die or whatever? I mean, come on, how many times am I going to tell people right. I died in 1968? You know what I mean? But if I walk in the door and I'm like, hey, I'm having chocolate chip ice cream today. You guys want some? That's more of something that I would want to respond to. Cause you know, in my afterlife, I'd be like, no, I like strawberry. Thanks anyways. But you know what I'm saying is you get involved. Those spirits want their stories to be told. And they don't want to be answering the same question over and over and over again. I mean, you or I would get tired of that too. So I think when you kind of, you know, mix it up and you go at them in a very professional, you know, human type of way, and you're asking them questions that matter to them, I think they're going to be more willing to communicate back to you.
So you don't own just one haunted hospital. You have two. And the Harriman Hospital, that's in Harriman, Tennessee. When did you end up buying that one?
We're going on a year and a half now.
Okay.
So we bought it about a year and a half ago.
And they were going to tear that one down.
That is correct. And so they were going to tear that one down to the cost of $12.4 million to taxpayers.
What?
Yeah, yeah. That's what the average demolition for a 168,000 square foot building is these days.
That's a big building.
Yeah. Well, what most people don't understand is when you have a hospital or you have something like this, something that's medical, they've actually got to go 18 inches down into the soil and remove all of that soil that the hospital was sitting on, and then truck it out, bring all that soil back in, and then turn it into whatever they want to turn it into. So it's not only the cost of the demolition of the building itself, but it's the cost of preparing the land that the hospital was on in order to utilize it for, you know, a parking lot or a city park or another housing project. So it's a little bit more intense than you just knocking down your neighbor's house because you don't like them and bringing new neighbors in and putting a new house there. There's a little more into it. It's a little more costly. But what most people don't understand is that goes right to the city taxes. Mm-hmm. They city's responsible for that when the city turns it over to the, you know, the residents of the county. You know, the state of Tennessee gives X amount of dollars, but once again, that's tax dollars. So we would all kind of be paying that $12.4 million to knock the building down. So instead, you know, we talked to the city of Harriman and like, hey, give us a chance to make some money. Give us a chance to put Harriman, you know, on the board and bring people to the sleepy little beautiful town. And, you know, it was a challenge because we're in the Bible Belt. And unfortunately, a lot of the city hall members and a lot of other people in the city don't really look at paranormal investigating the way we do. they've been conditioned by watching movies that we all sit in a dark room, you know, with a pentagram on the floor and candles and chanting and trying to raise the devil.
Right.
And, you know, because that's what Hollywood has turned us paranormal investigators into. So when we tried to purchase the building, that was the first thing that was brought up was, you know, what are you going to do for it? You know, how do you do, what's paranormal investigating? You know, I've watched this on TV and we don't want, you know, we don't want that going on, you know, across the street from City Hall. And we're like, no, wait a minute here. So we were kind of explaining to them exactly what we do. And we teach history and all that other stuff. And they were kind of intrigued. So we actually had, I think, 4 or 5 members of the city come over to South Pittsburgh during a public investigation. They actually did an investigation with us. One of the gentlemen that was actually on the industrial board, I think, was touched, had a bunch of experiences. And we all sat talking afterwards, and he was like, wow, I never realized. And I was like, yeah, this is what we do. And he was like, and we got the industrial board actually hooked on what we do. As a matter of fact, one of the gentlemen comes back regularly to investigate, you know, the hospital that he called home for many, many years. And he was like, I never saw this side of this. And I said, yeah, we're not a bunch of people who, you know, are trying to conjure stuff up and do bad things. I said, we're trying to reach out to the residents of the hospital that have a story to tell. They have history that they want to pass on to us. You know, they have experiences they want to, you know, pass on to us. And they were like, yeah, we see that. This is like really, really cool. So we went back to the city. We went back to the industrial board and we kind of did a 5-year plan with them. That they had expectations of what they wanted us to do as business owners. We had expectations of what we needed the city to do for us. And we kind of put it all together, came to a happy medium. And a year and a half later, here we are. And I think we're kind of exceeding their expectations. Because we, like I said, we do more than just paranormal investigating there. Last October, we had 142 people from Hollywood who shot a movie there that all brought, you know, revenue into Harriman. Which was really kind of neat because we had a business that was called the Pastry Princess, and she did pastries, and she walked up to Brooke after the event was over, and she thanked us, and we were like, what's up? She says, I just made in a week what we made last year in a year.
Oh, you're so kidding.
So she made all her money.
That's so awesome.
And so that's what we, you know, that was kind of what our goal was to keep that history going, but also help the infrastructure of the cities that right. we're doing business in. And like I said, they couldn't be happier because number one, we saved $12.4 million, you know, taxpayers, but now we're bringing in Hollywood, we're bringing in PBS, we're bringing in people like yourself who are traveling all over the country to come and visit, in my opinion, probably one of the most active locations in America.
Had you been in there before to investigate? Or did you just have that feeling?
No. So this is kind of a funny story, and I love sharing this. But basically what happened is we went to Harriman. We told them what we wanted to do. The mayor was, he's a really great guy. Him and the maintenance man gave us a tour of the building. It was rough in some areas and beautiful in other areas. We were walking through the building, and the mayor was telling us stories about how the fire department won't come in there because they've had experiences. You know, the police are afraid of the building because they've had experiences. Talking about the residents driving by and seeing people in the windows, and there's nobody in the building. So it was neat to hear from the city, you know, kind of what was going on in the hospital before we even walked into it. Then we talked to a couple of the doctors, and the doctors were talking about their experiences in the hospital. So it was really kind of neat. So we kind of had a basis thinking that, okay, the building is, you know, active. But once again, we weren't really sure to what degree it was. So we got permission from the city to basically borrow the keys for a couple of weeks. And we walked in the building. It was a dark, cold night. Of course, we walked into the building, and the first thing we see is one of the girls sees a man walking in the building, and we all, it's kind of neat. I'm from Chicago, so we have the tightest gun policies in the nation. But so I turn around and all the guys have their guns drawn, and here's little old me going, oh my God, I'm gonna get killed. But they were all scared because we thought somebody had broken in. You know, the building was vacant for 13 years. It was, you know, we were told that there were people who were kind of living around the building and stuff like that, that they were, you know, chasing away. So that was our first impression, was that we, you know, we got to get somebody out of the building. So we locked the girls into a room because we didn't want the girls to be hurt in case. So we're chasing this guy around, and we've seen him multiple times, like literally saw him. And we're chasing him around what's the OR area and recovery. And then all of a sudden, he just kind of disappeared. We couldn't find him anywhere. We kind of chased him down to an area where we couldn't find him. So we let the girls out of the room, and we're kind of walking around again, and there he is again. And we all looked at him, and we could see him. We walked right past all of us. So we're chasing him around, and it's kind of neat if you've been to Harriman. There's actually kind of a circle where you can go through the locker rooms. You can go through the OR, and then it kind of goes into the hallway. So we're literally chasing this guy in a circle. And finally, he goes into this room that we're like, oh, we got him, because there's no way in or out. So we know for sure that we got him. So we walk in the room, and there's nobody in the room. And there's eight of us who all saw this gentleman.
And we chased all looked at him. Each other.
Yeah. All eight of us kind of looked at each other just with this puzzled look on our faces, like, what did we just see? And one of the guys looked at me and goes, you're going to buy the building, aren't you? And I looked at him and I was like, you're darn right we are. What's really kind of neat is that same gentleman, we see him throughout the building on a regular occasion. We don't know who he is. He doesn't identify himself, but there'll be times where we'll be walking up the stairs and he's literally just leaning up against the staircase. He'll make eye contact with you and then just kind of disappear. And I have a staff of about 40 some people that are at Harriman. There are volunteers that help out, you know, keep the building clean, run events. Everybody has witnessed this gentleman. Like, there hasn't been a single person on our team who hasn't ran into him somewhere in the building. And like I said, it's really kind of a unique situation because he's a regular, like a regular resident that we see.
And especially with your history, that is unique, isn't it? For everyone to see this, it'd be unique for one or two of them to see it, but that's a lot of people.
It's really, really a lot of people. And he generally kind of has the same, I guess you would call it, like attitude, or he just seems to be like a guy who's just kind of watching over the building. Like, well, literally, and I think the night that we went into the building, he was checking us out. He was literally like checking us out to see what our intentions were with the building. Because remember, the building was closed for 13 years. They did a little bit of training in the building, but primarily it was closed. I mean, they had it locked pretty tight. And I would say, you know, as paranormal investigators, there's probably some people who broke in here and there. But for the most part, it was pretty vacant. And I think, you know, there's eight individuals walking around the building. We're asking questions and we're bringing devices in that they probably really weren't familiar with yet. And I think he was checking us out. And I think now it's to the point where he knows what we're doing in the building. And I think he cares about his building. And like I said, we'll be walking in, and Rhonda all the time. Rhonda's kind of our maintenance girl that's there pretty much every day. But she'll call me on the phone. She's like, I saw him again. I'm like, where is he this time? Well, he's leaning up against the elevators. He just seems to be there kind of like just making sure we're doing our jobs.
And looks so real that you think you're chasing a person.
Yeah, he's very, very, he's probably one of the strongest entities in terms of manifestation that I've ever seen, where, I mean, you can see detail on him. I mean, he's, you know, he's opaque, but he's also very detailed. And he's there, you know, he doesn't stay very long. Like I said, you kind of walk up the stairs and you get maybe three to five seconds of him, and then he just kind of fades. And then you'll be walking down the hallway and there he is again. I know that we had a group that was there not too long ago that we caught him on video actually following the girls, you know, down the hallway, and you can see him manifest on video, and then he gets darker and darker and darker as he's walking towards the camera. And then you see one of the girls in the group kind of look around, like behind her, like, what's going on? And then as she's turning around to look, he just kind of, I know it sounds silly, but just kind of fogs away, just kind of literally just breaks apart and goes away. We showed the video to the girl, and the girl was like, I felt somebody walking behind me. And she was like, I felt that presence. And I'm like, well, here it is. You know, it's right on camera.
Wow. Do you think it was him? We were talking earlier about they were shooting the movie, was it? In the hospital. And they're like, stop, stop, stop. Somebody just walked through. But nobody did. I'm assuming that was him then?
It's certainly very possible. I mean, like I said, I feel like I'm not necessarily sure if he's the maintenance man of the building. But I feel he's got some real deep, strong connection to the building. I mean, for all we know, he might be the guy who built the darn thing. Mm. We really don't know, like I said, but you get a real sense of ownership, you know, when he's in the building and when you catch a view of him, because he's not, you know, he's not aggressive. He's not, he kind of like is happy-go-lucky, just kind of, like I said, usually leaning up against an entranceway or an elevator or up against the wall. And it's kind of like, you know, like as a child and you're putting something together and your dad's kind of over your shoulder, making sure that you're putting it together right. That's kind of the feeling you get from him. Just, you know, this is my building. I want to make sure what you're doing is right. And, but I'm not going to bother you. I'm not going to be aggressive. I'm just checking things out. And then he'll just kind of disappear and show up somewhere else.
Do you think too, because you mentioned about people coming in and saying, what year were you born or what year did you die? And the same questions. Do you think this guy just kind of gets a kick out of the reactions too? I mean, well, how fun was that? You guys were chasing him in a circle. You locked up the women. It was like, everybody, draw your guns.
That could be too, because think about it. The poor guy's just an innocent, you know, bystander walking around his own hospital. And, you know, here we are, guns drawn, girls locked right? up. He's probably sitting there laughing going, okay, and you know, just that natural fear of, you know, because I'm not really afraid of spirits, but I am afraid of humans. And you know, so if it was a spirit, it wouldn't have bothered us. But you know, this was the first time we were all in the building, and you know, to see something like that walking around so quickly into an investigation, we were like, whoa, like, you know, I mean, it happened within, I don't, maybe 20, 30 minutes of us walking in the building. And so, like you said, I think he was somebody who was probably poking a little bit of fun at us, probably trying to scare us, to be really honest with you. And then as he realized that we weren't going anywhere and that we cared about his building as much as he did, I think now he's kind of sticking around for laughs and giggles and just to make sure that we're doing him right.
Entertaining, I would think.
Yeah.
So that the Harriman Hospital, that's very active then. So you feel a lot of spirits. So you haven't spent as much time, obviously. You haven't owned it as long as Pittsburgh. But do you get a good feel for that? Have, like with investigative groups, have they picked up on a lot of activity there?
Yeah, we have. So, and kind of what's kind of funny is like Old South Pittsburgh, I'll walk anywhere in this building in the middle of the night. I don't care if it's 2 o'clock in the morning or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I have no fear, excuse me, whatsoever in this building. Very comfortable, very homey. I will not walk Harriman Hospital alone at night. There is something about that building that just gives me the heebie-jeebies. And I don't think it's malevolent. I don't think it's demonic. I don't think it's bad. I just think that building, when I walk into Harriman, I'm constantly feeling like somebody's looking over my shoulder. Like Harriman is something I've never witnessed before in the paranormal. When I'm walking down the hallway, I feel like there's a ton of eyes on me. And it's just kind of, I don't, an overwhelming feeling. It's kind of a scary feeling. It's kind of like you're going to turn the corner and see just this group of people like pointing at you. And it's just, it's that active and it's that unique of a building. And I've been through a bunch of buildings across America, and I've never been in a building where I was uncomfortable walking the halls. This building, for some odd reason, I feel like there's just a lot of activity going on in there. And I constantly feel like I'm being watched in that building at night. So I just won't do it. I have to have somebody with me.
That's interesting to me.
It's very interesting to me, like I said, because I've never had that feeling before of it's like intense. I don't know how to describe it, but it's just like an intense feeling of really being watched. Like really, really being watched.
Now, with both of the locations, you can do investigations there. Do you do overnights? Do you do like 4-hour ghost hunts? How do you guys have that set up there?
So we're working on some new programs for next year, but primarily both locations, we do private overnights, which are from 6 p.m. until 4 a.m. And we do them every day of the week. But we're also working, and we do public investigations. Like a good example is this weekend, we've got the Wraith Chasers in Harriman, I believe on Friday night, and then Saturday night, they're going to be here at Old South Pittsburgh. So we do public events. We do them sometimes with celebrities. Mostly we do them just with our team. We do what's called a free roam public event, which basically means that in the old days, we used to structure it where we would put a group of 10 together and we walk through the building and you were stuck with those 10 people throughout the whole night. You'd investigate. What we found is that it works pretty good until you got a group of people who are really serious and you got that one person who has to talk about, you know, the date they had the night before with Johnny and they can't keep their mouth shut. So what we realized works best for us is we do what's called a free roam event. So basically what we do is we let people kind of roam the building by themselves. There are specific rules that they got to follow. But what's really cool is, number one, it gives everybody the opportunity to kind of meet new people, meet new investigators, do new styles. They're not stuck with the same group of people. While that's going on, our teams are throughout the building in some of the active areas of the building, and they're doing an investigation. So you can actually join in with our team and investigate with them. Or if you feel like, you know, like let's say JB's doing the Estes method and you want to go to a quiet room and do EVPs, you can go do that on your own. But it allows our guest to do a public investigation and kind of do it on their setting or in their style. So they're not really stuck in a group. They can go throughout the building and investigate wherever they want to investigate. But it also gives them the opportunity to work with our team and to do an investigation with them as well. So they kind of got the option to do one or the other. And like I said, what's really neat about it is, you know, if Johnny had too much Taco Bell and his belly's been grumbling the whole night, it's really hard to do an EVP session, you know, right, with somebody who's got that stomach going. So this allows them to kind of do their own thing on their own time and not be stuck with, you know, somebody who may not be quite as serious as the next person. And we're finding that it works out really well. We've got a lot of people who continually come back because they get a little bit of evidence, you know, on this night, and they want to come back and verify or validate that evidence, so they'll come back again. So it works out really well. So, and those are generally, depending on what season it is, it's generally either, I think it's 8 to 2 a.m. And then once winter gets here, we get longer nights, so we do those from 6 p.m. to 2 a.m. The other thing that's really neat about it, too, is we do three separate settings. So you can either do 6 to 10, 6 to midnight, or 6 to 2 a.m. And the prices are different, too, so that you can kind of pick and choose, you know, how much you want to spend on an investigation and what time you want to stay till.
Oh, so we find that
works really well. Yeah, it works good because it's budget conscious, too. And I think the cheapest investigation for, I think, 4 hours, I think, is like $50.
Oh, that's a good deal.
Yeah, and then I think the 8 hour one, I think, is $79 or something like that. So yeah, so it is very reasonable and it's a lot of fun. And a good example is we had one here at South Pittsburgh a couple of weeks ago. We had 52 people in the building. I think 38 to 40 of them actually were touched while they were doing their investigation.
Oh my gosh.
To the
point
where they walked out the door and they're like, oh my gosh, something played with my hair. We had one lady who was sitting down in a chair and somebody was rubbing her forearm. And everybody was kind of leaving and they're all kind of like, whoa, that was just so cool.
So can they get information and book on your website?
They can't book on the website. They can book public investigations on the website. We do things the old fashioned way. We really want to talk to our guests who are going to book an overnight. So we either talk to them via email or text or phone call.
Perfect.
We like that personal touch, so we can actually talk to it. I'm not a real big fan of that cold kind of booking calendar thing that's online. I really like to be able to talk to our guests, and I've got a staff of three of us who will take reservations. And then, so what you do is you put a deposit down and then that secures your date, just like most locations. And then you pay your balance, the week before your investigation, and then you come and do your investigation.
And I'll put a link to the website up wherever you're listening. Just look, it'll be right there. And then the phone number's there, the email address is there. Just go to the website.
Yeah, that's the easiest way to do it.
Ronnie D, this has been so interesting. I think I could, seriously, I think we could talk about this for another hour or two, but I'm trying to be respectful of your time. Thank you so very much for doing this. And that wraps up our conversation with Ronnie D about the old South Pittsburgh Hospital and the old historic Harriman Hospital. If you'd like more information on both hospitals, paranormal investigations, or tours, check out their websites. Visit the Old South Pittsburgh website at osphprc.com and the Harriman Hospital website at oldhistoricharrimanhospital.com. Also, check out their Facebook pages, Haunted Old Pittsburgh Hospital and Old Historic Harriman Hospital. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts and you can try it for 3 days free, or you can go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. You can find everything there. It's also all ad free. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us at The Grave Talks, thank you for listening.